I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Royal Blue Podcast, where, again, we have got another Everton fixture to look forward to right towards the end of the weekend. Well, the start of next week, really. Everton will be travelling to the south coast to take on Brighton at 8 o'clock on Monday evening. But Carlo Ancelotti has previewed that match today as we're recording on Friday afternoon. And he's given some rather interesting injury updates, we'll have to say. And he's talked about Jean-Philippe Gabamin as well and Josh King's contract situation. And, of course, Brighton themselves. But we'll get into all that in a sec. I'm your host today, Adam Jones, joined today by Dave Prentice, Connor O'Neill and Gav Buckland. And Connor, we'll start with you. You were tuned in to Carlo Ancelotti's press conference along with me this afternoon. And we had some injury up from Carlo Ancelotti. And it struck me as if Everton might be in some sort of midfield dilemma going into Monday's game because Andre Gomes is out injured. Allen seems to be facing a late test. Obviously, we know that Abdoulaye Doucouré won't be involved. So, who are Everton going to play in midfield?
I think that was the million-dollar question, wasn't it? After the finish, and you kind of take stock of what Carlo said, and it was kind of very much a thing of, well, if Allen doesn't make these late checks, Monday's team could look very interesting. I think that the way he spoke about Allen, it didn't sound too positive. I think if we're going to look into the kind of what he said, and it's always a difficult one, isn't it, I suppose, because when you do a press conference on a Friday afternoon, the game's not until Monday night. There's probably three training sessions before they will play, maybe a 4:50 training on the day of the game. So it can be difficult to give an actual injury update. But going off Carlo's tone, he didn't sound overly too positive. It was the checks and wasn't too positive, but I think ultimately you just got to hope and pray that Allen does get back fit, he does return, and if he doesn't, it will make interest of you, and potentially Jean McGavin might be thrown in the deep end, and he might have no option but to start because Everton will be so short on numbers.
I mean, Preno, Allen, it's probably worth mentioning that Carlo Ancelotti said that Allen had trained normally this morning, so maybe there's a little bit of hope that he might be fit for this game Monday. But how important is he to this side? I think we really realised that against Crystal Palace, didn't he? He was a very noticeable absence.
Absolutely. In these current circumstances, you say he's absolutely vital. But, he had a hamstring problem earlier in the season. And, it always worries you, hamstring injuries. The potential for recurrence is so high, which is why they won't take any chances. I mean, if he's trained normally this morning, that would suggest to me that he's okay. I mean, he'll have made that public in the knowledge that all they're waiting on now is to see if there's any kind of reaction to that. If there isn't any reaction, well, you'd expect him to start. I mean, that's today as well, Friday. The game isn't until Monday night. So obviously he's got another couple of days between now and then. So it doesn't sound too bleak, that situation. Gabamin will probably be chomping at the bit, so he would love to get involved. I mean, from the quotes we saw from him earlier in the week, he was very, very keen to be involved. He told the manager he wanted to be involved against Crystal Palace, and he was. But it is asking an awful lot to throw him in from the start of a game so quickly. And you would feel for the lad if, that much responsibility and pressure was put on his shoulders. But yeah, we're all crossing our fingers and hoping that Allen comes through okay. Because Everton have been hit with injuries this season quite significantly. I know it seems to be a bit of a theme, so with other teams, notably across the park, people talking about the injury issues that they've sustained. Everton almost seems to have flown under the radar with the problems they've endured, but they have had a lot of problems this season, not least the goalkeeper still missing again, on Monday night, and Robin Olsen, so almost continuing, who's had obviously his problems himself. So, it's been a turbulent season in terms of fitness. We've just got to hope that, we can get some kind of recognisable midfield out there on Monday because it's a tough old game.
Mm. I mean, Gav Preno's talking about the significant injuries that Everton have had this season. It feels almost that Allan's had a number of significant injuries, doesn't it? You know, he had a bit of an issue earlier on in the season, didn't he? And then, you know, he obviously got that injury against Leicester in December as well. It feels like Everton haven't really had that many games where Allan's fully fit.
Not since October, probably. And when he has come back, he's taken four or five games to get up to speed, hasn't he, really? And then played a few games and broken down again. Yeah, he's actually a vital part of our team. Alan, I know we were talking about players of the season last week, and I don't recall anybody mentioned them, but I think when he's been fully fit and playing well, he's been outstanding for us, to be honest with you. I'm just wondering, you know, if he did play on Monday, what formation would you play? Would you play Allan and Dave 4-3-3 with Allan and Dave Sigurdsson? That's what you'd have to play, wouldn't you, really?
Well, I think that's it. That's the million-dollar question, because I think
before
the Palace game, I was very much an advocate of playing three at the back and then seeing where we could build from there. But I think after that Palace game, I would probably think to myself, it just doesn't work. I think Everton seemed a little bit better with a four-back, so maybe Allan Davis and Sigurdsson might be the best way to go about it. Even if it does mean pushing James over to the right flank.
Yeah, because you couldn't play 3-4-3. That starts at Palace and you play Gomez with Allan, because you have a midfield then of Allan Davies, Deanier and Coleman, wouldn't you, really? Which is not ideal.
It makes that problem that we talked about earlier in the week a little bit worse. Isn't it, about the balance?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think you could play three if Allan wasn't fit. You could play three foot. Well, really, but the four in midfield that probably should have started on Monday and have Sigurdsson in place of Gomez. So in some respects, it's if you think about it that way, it's not necessarily a massive problem. I think if we as you say there, add that if he does come back, it's a bit of a bonus. I mean, it allows us to play 4-3-3. If he doesn't come back, we can still manage it if we bring Guilfi into the 3-4-3. So we'll see. I mean, going back on Preno's points, spot on. I mean, I wouldn't want to see him rush back and then he breaks down. You know, again, when have you still got 8-9 games left? You know, it's all important. It's rather leave him out for the game and sort of get him, get his fitness up a lot more than risk him. I'm not sure for me whether it's that big a problem, because there are those two options available to us, to be honest with you.
I think it's an important question that Gav raises there, Connor. What formation do you think Everton are going to play on Monday? Because, you know, it seemed the last few weeks or months in particular, Everton have been chopping and changing, and they might find a system that works well for a game, maybe two games, and then it just seems to fall apart again and they're starting from square one, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it's to see us, you know, I can't pass the four at the back, maybe, you know, two holes and two Wildman Calvert-Lewin up top and maybe one in behind. Similar to what I think we've seen so far this season, the role I think is, you know, you could say it's worked quite well. You know, look at the result on this season, they've been really, really good, and, you know, the away form is far better than the home form. So I think it'll be certainly along them lines. I think I'm with you, as I think the three at the back, I quite keen to see that come into play a little bit before Crystal Palace, but then when you see it, and it just doesn't work. And I think Carlo will just stick with the four at the back, you know, two midfields, one in front, two wide men, and Calvert-Lewin top. I think he'll stick with what was best, and he'll just hope that Everton, you know, can pull up another fine away day performance. And I think in some respects, maybe that formation maybe suits Everton a little bit more on the road in terms of playing a little bit more in a counter-attack and being able to get in deeper and just defend deeper. I think Everton have struggled for me this season when, you know, you really want to stick the game to someone. You know, you think the home games against like Newcastle and Fulham, where you're just crying out for someone to take the game by the scruff of the neck and drive everyone forward 10 yards up the pitch, and just not happened. And I think away from home, you kind of get away with playing a little bit more deeper, a little bit more defensive because you're away from home. So I think it'll be similar along them lines and what we've seen so far this season on the road. I can't see Carlo changing anything now, and and maybe even start afresh. I think it'll be more of what we've seen so far this season.
Hmm. And I suppose if that is the case, Preno, and we're going to need a defensive midfielder. I don't think Gabamon, as much as Carlo Ancelotti's been talking him up, I don't think Gabamon's going to be ready to start a game, especially not from Monday onwards. But it does seem that Everton seem to have an embarrassment of riches at the minute at centre-back. Do you push one of them into the defensive midfield role for the time being? You know, Godfrey, Ben, Mason Holgate?
No, I'm not a fan of that. I mean, I know a lot was made of Mason Holgate doing that role successfully at Old Trafford last season. I say successfully. Was it Tom Davis he played alongside where he said he just basically man-marked him the whole game and said didn't want to leave his side. He got through it, but it's not something that you'd like to see other than an absolute emergency. And again, Ben Godfrey, I mean, I think that's being hard on the lad, to be honest. I mean, yes, he can play there and he's played there for Norwich, but, you know, he's a centre-back who on occasions can play full-back. And you don't want to mess with the lad's development, you know, even more by asking him to play in another completely unfamiliar position. No, I'd like to see, you know, sort of square pegs in square holes. That means, you know, some midfield. I've got, you know, middles available. It just depends on the fitness levels, I suppose, and whether we see like a change of formation or a change of system. It's a head scratcher. But then again, how often have we said about Carlo's lineups this season? Again, we'll be sat there on Monday night waiting for the team sheet to drop, thinking, you know, so what's going to happen next? On this occasion, it's not really anything to do with Carlo's tactical nuances, although it may be. It's more likely to be just basically who's available. And it underlines, again, what a weird old season it's been. It's just, you know, apart from the fixtures being all over the place, apart from the real strange, surreal situation of no fans being inside, fans having a major effect on games, we've also, you know, been chopping and changing all season with lineups because of injury issues. It really has been like one of the weirdest seasons I can imagine in lots and lots of different ways. Let's hope it finishes really weirdly. Suddenly it's like mad run and, you know, sort of qualify for Europe and even more. Who knows?
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Where do you stand on that debate then, Gav? You know, I think the last couple of weeks when I've seen the team sheet drop and it's eventually been a three at the back, there have been people on social media suggesting that maybe Holgate or Godfrey would be in a defensive midfield sort of role. Is that something that you'd particularly want to see over the course of the next couple of weeks while Gabamon finds his way to full fitness?
No. Going back to Preno's points, horses for courses, I think... just realised. Yeah. I think I'm trying to feel dreadful proud to carry this on, but I won't be. So I think I'm completely thrown here now, by the way, if you want any sense, obviously, which you don't get anyway. Perno's point, I mean, Godfrey's played in enough positions this year to give him another task, hasn't he? So it's rule him out. I'm not sure about Holgate. I think he's got enough to try and prove himself in the team at the moment rather than swapping his position. I do like the idea of four at the back with a three of Sigurdsson, Allen and Davis if Allen is fit. But I think it just doesn't work, especially this late in the season. Another change in tweak, not necessarily tweaking of the players, which I don't think will be warranted, to be honest with you, lad. So, a big no from me.
I think that was decisive from the pair of you.
Yeah.
While we're on the subject of midfielders and injuries, etc., it was a bit more of a positive update on Abdoulaye Doucouré today from Carlo Ancelotti. He said that Doucouré's recent scan went pretty well and that he's due for another scan in 3 weeks, which will determine whether the midfielder will be able to return to training. Fingers crossed he will, and that will surely mean that he'll play again before the end of the season, which will be a nice little boost for Everton, won't it?
Absolutely, it will. I think it was probably the one thing I think that has probably took a lot of Evertonians by surprise, because I think when he picked up the injury and Carlo, you know, kind of said it'd be 8 to 10 weeks, I think many of us, well, I think we all thought that was season over for the lads, wasn't it? It was, you know, what a blow, and you know, that's season over. And I think now the fact that Carlo's trying to give everyone a glimmer of hope, it's interesting. I think the thing for me with what Carlo says was that he doesn't normally say stuff like that, so he must be pretty confident himself that he is going to make a turn. I think we look at, you know, previous cities gives, you know, James Rodriguez and Alan, he's kind of been quite quick to kind of play down the when they're going to return, you know, how long they're going to be out for, etc. He's kind of, he's been always been keen, kind of not put any time for, or not making concrete claims. And for him to sit there today and say, no, I think he'll back play before the end of the season, is a massive boost for Everton. And, you know, hopefully if he does get back for the final few games of the season, there'll be games that we've still got something riding on and we still need to win. And his presence should give us a massive boost in them games. It's just about us making sure that by the time he does return, and possibly a couple of weeks' time, we're still in with a chance of Europe and we're still fighting for a Europa League or possibly Champions League place.
Mm. I mean, Gav, it's been 4 games already now without Decore in the side and in all competitions, and Everton haven't managed to win any of them. It's no coincidence, really. He's vital to this team.
Oh, yeah. I mean, how we wish we could have him 3 years ago. Mm. You know, when it was probably first mooted. I think he's a tremendous player. He gives us something that we haven't got, which is leg and ability to get move with the ball up the pitch. You know, 30, 40 yards, I don't think anybody else has got that. He's got a lot of endurance, and when he's out, we really miss him. We had this conversation last week, didn't we? Did you say about it being player of the year? Yeah, absolutely. I think he is a really big miss for us, because he just gives us something different. He adds so much to the team that we lose when not playing. And it would be great to see him back for the last couple of games. But again, I don't know how fit he's going to be. I mean, I think Carlo said he's out for 3 weeks, and then maybe, if he's lucky, 2 weeks training, something like that. It sort of takes it to middle May, which is probably 1 or 2 games left. Would you want to risk him? The encouraging thing for me is it just brings his rehabilitation forward, doesn't it, for next season, thinking that it's next season. So that's the main thing. Especially, dare I say, when he gets a little bit older, these things take longer. So yeah, that was really good news. Any games before the end of the season is a bonus, but yeah, we just miss him so much. And we missed him certainly in the game on Monday, and miss him again on this Monday as well. Big fan of us, to be honest with you. Yeah. And as I say, I wish we had him 3 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, Preno, he's proven himself to be really integral part of Carlo Ancelotti's system over the course of this year so far, hasn't he? I think he's been one of Everton's highest appearance makers under Carlo Ancelotti, I think, before he got injured, like getting the most minutes under his belt. So I think maybe his absence has been the reason behind Everton maybe struggle to find the right shape and balance in midfield.
Yeah, I mean, he brings so many qualities to that midfield. I mean, it sounds a bit silly just to say energy, because, you know, every player that plays in midfield should have energy. But he directs that energy in a very intelligent fashion. You know, he just doesn't run around like a headless chicken, you know. So he makes his runs purposefully, whether it's like tracking back at just the right moments or adding his weight, you know, sort of to the front three, you know, when it matters. He is a really, really intelligent footballer. And we have missed that enormously. That's why he's played so consistently throughout the season. A, because he's been effective, but B, he's one of those players as well that seems to, obviously, you know, so we've, well, probably jinxed him by saying that, you know, so very rarely gets injured. But, you know, he doesn't, he plays, you know, week in, week out. And even earlier in the season, you know, when players were being rotated, he was one of the few that was rotated as frequently, because he's got this incredible fitness levels. So when you can rely on a player like that, you know, he is normally like one of the first names on the team sheet. And he has. He's been a really, really, you know, inspired signing. And remember how we all felt, you know, when he sustained the injury and we thought it was going to be for the end of the season. It was a really big, crushing blow. And, you know, you can normally gauge by fans' reactions how important a player is by that. I mean, I won't name names, but think of some of the other players in the squad that maybe if they got injured, you think would be the same level of disappointment, you know, so maybe not. There's only probably two or three others that you'd really, you know, miss. Richarlison, perhaps, you know, if one of those players was taken out from now till the end of the season, you know, you'd really, you know, sort of feel it. And we felt it when it happened to Doucouré. So, yeah, great signing, great positive, you know, so when he arrived, but equally underlines, you know, how important he's been to the squad. And what a big miss he's been. So, you know, I was very, very heartened to see his tweet in the last half an hour or so. He tweeted about how he, you know, hopes to be back before the end of the season. You know, he's being positive, you know, so he's been quite bullish about his return. So fingers crossed we will see him again, you know, sooner rather than later.
And Connor, well, we're talking about Everton's formation changes as well. It's not just the midfield that's been affected. It's been up front as well. And Carlo Ancelotti discussed Josh King and his chances, and he kind of hinted that the formation change had maybe badly affected Josh King's chances at coming on and affecting games, because he's asked to come on in replace of either Richarlison or Dominic Calvert-Lewin. And he also discussed Josh King's contract news. Do you want to enlighten us as to what Carlo Ancelotti said there?
Well, it was interesting because he basically said there's been no talks around Josh King staying beyond kind of when his contract's up at the end of this season, and he wasn't looking to the future, and it was all kind of, he was very good, he wasn't needing much away. And it was quite telling, I think, as well, when he said about, you know, the tactical approach and the tactical changes have meant that he's basically being forced to watch on from the sidelines. And I don't know, I just kind of got the feeling from what Carlo was saying that maybe Josh King's not with the plans moving forward, and that the club will look to go elsewhere. And I'm not someone to call Carlo Ancelotti a liar, but I find it hard to believe that him and Marcel Brand are sitting there right now and not thinking about the future, not, and not thinking about the summer transfer window and targets that they're going to aim for, and they're going to hope to sign it. I find it hard to believe that they're not sitting there already drawing up lists and looking at, you know, potential players to come in. So for him to say that and kind of play it down the way he did, I think that was a stark message to Josh King and probably Josh King's future at Everton. Not to basically say he can't really play in the formation I'm playing at the minute, it was also quite telling. And I think the whole Josh King kind of experiment at Everton has been quite disappointing, hasn't it? Because I think we all when he come in, that be that kind of that figure who could maybe come off the bench with 20 minutes to go, you know, half an hour to go, and use his pace and stretch the game for Everton and give them that little bit of added impetus up front. But it's just not happens, and Carlo clearly doesn't fancy him. Carlo clearly doesn't. Not clearly in Carlo's plans, and I think after today's kind of Carlo's thoughts today on the whole situation, I find it hard to believe that he'll be at Everton next season. I think Everton he'll be looking to go well to get regular time, and Everton come for a much more improved kind of additional forward to come in and challenge Dominic Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison.
Do you agree with that, Gav? I mean, if you were Josh King listening to Carlo Ancelotti's comments today, what would you be thinking?
I was speaking to my agents and say could be busy over the next month or two, you know. My experience, the greatest managers are all, shall we say, economical with the truth, to put a finer point on it. So, I Carlo's in good company there if he's maybe perhaps not given the full picture. Yeah, so I get that. I mean, you've only got to see the minutes played and when he's played, really. When he's been needed, he's not been on the pitch. I'm thinking from that what Carlo's saying is I can't really play him in a 4-4-2, and that I can only really play him a 4-3-3, but I've not had many opportunities to play. That would be perhaps my reading of it, and perhaps not saying not through the middle. So yeah, we said when he was, you know, when the deal was done, that it was sort of one that he's just space of time. But no sort of longer commitment. It wasn't a gamble as such, because of that. And if it doesn't work out well, you know, that's just one of them things. But it's not particularly damaging, I'd say, to us. Maybe more damaging to Josh King, Joshua King, as he likes to be known as, I believe. Who knows, though? Who knows? There's still a lot of games left. So, you know, nearly a quarter of the season. So he still might make a difference, but at this stage, I'd be speaking to my agent. to be honest with you. And maybe looking for see what the options are during the summer.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Brenno, I think Gav makes a good point about King there. I mean, my view of the move when it went through at the end of the January transfer window is that King will be coming in to be essentially a cup striker. You know, Ellis Sims had just on loan in January. Obviously, Moyes Keane had left on loan at the start of the season as well. So Everton looked quite short up front, but Josh King hasn't really had those kind of chances to come in and, you know, be a backup striker. So to Carlo Ancelotti's today, what do you think Josh King needs to do to try and force his way into any sort of plans, even coming off the bench?
I'm struggling with the whole Josh King situation, to be honest. I mean, you're right when you say that, you know, we did shorten that position and we needed backup. And, you know, Carlo has been consistently positive in his previous press conferences about Josh King's contribution on the training pitch and, you know, how he would get minutes, and then doesn't give him any. He brings him on for like a couple of minutes at the end of a game. I think it was half an hour against Fulham, was it? I think it's like just shy of half an hour, which is like the longest we've seen him in any game. I might have got that game mixed up, but, you know, I've seen very little of him, you know, at all.
Out of time away to Chelsea, I seem to remember he come on.
Yeah,
at least 20 odd minutes.
Yeah,
you know, game. But I mean, that was,
you know, 20 odd minutes, you know, away at Chelsea in a game that we're getting absolutely, you know, sort of highs in. And yeah, it's you get the impression reading between the lines, and probably wrongly, that Carlo doesn't really fancy him, and makes you think, well, why has he brought him in the first place? If that's the case, is it just literally a backup option in case anything happens to Dominic Calvert-Lewin, and, you know, therefore he has a ready-made replacement? Because, you know, the numbers stack up, you know, in terms of his goals and his contributions, you know, before he arrived at Everton. You know, he looked like a very, very promising signing. But it's almost like, you know, Carlo's got him there just in case. And that just in case situation hasn't really arisen. Therefore, you know, he's just sitting there kicking his heels on the bench and coming on at that most difficult periods of games, like for the last quarter of an hour, when you've got to try and, you know, sort of make an impact as best you can. And it's deeply frustrating for him, certainly. Maybe not for us watching, but it just gives me scratching my head a little bit. You know, so why would we bring him in the first place if we're not going to use him at all? A weird one, very, very weird situation. But yeah, I can't see him being around, you know, so beyond the end of the season. I think he'll be looking elsewhere. And as Gavin says, his agent's going to be very, very busy. I think Celtic's already been mentioned, hasn't it, with Eddie Howe, the Celtic manager who isn't even in position yet, who's already being linked about a move for him. That's the way the modern media works. But there we go.
Don't think you'd find many Everton fans who would be too gutted if that move did happen in the summer, if we're honest. But let's look ahead to Monday night's game. Everton travelling all the way down to the south coast to face Brighton. And Connor, are you just happy to see an away game at this point?
Yeah, I think we all are, aren't we? I think it's like the double kind of boost in some respects, in the sense that it's frustrating watching home games when you can't go and you can't be there. You're forced to sit at home and kick every ball and think, you know, I'd be there now, etc. And just simply how bad the second thing is, simply how bad the form has been, how bad we've been at home this season. And it's really still have a new game. And like I said earlier, I think Everton have just got to hope that they can carry on and play the way they have done away from home and pick up, you know, 3 points. Because I think, you know, this game is massive, isn't it? Because if Everton don't pick up all 3 points this weekend, then it does leave the Europa League hopes hang on by a thread, and they probably then can't afford to drop any more points before the season's out. I think, you know, Carlo said he needs to win six from nine to confirm Europa League, and now we've got 8 games and we still need to win 6 of them if you go off his reckoning. So it's a massive game. We've just got to hope that Everton, you know, play the way they have done on the road this season, and you know, Brighton and all the 6 points with the drop zone, but there'll be no pushover and the same, you know, mugs. And I've seen a bit of them over the last couple of weeks and I've been quite impressed. They've looked well, they look lively, and it'll be another tough game. But I think Everton they've just got to be on it, haven't they? I think ultimately they've got to take the chances. They just can't keep creating the chances that they have for week on week and missing them. And on Monday but there's been other games in the last couple of weeks where we've missed a half of the chances. It can't continue, because ultimately, you know, goals win your games. If you don't score goals, you win games, and that's been Everton's problem over the last few weeks. So I think it's vitally important that not only do we turn up and actually, you know, I don't know, from the first whistle, but when we do get chances, we take them, because we just can't keep missing the chances that we have been over the last couple of weeks.
Mm. I mean, Gav, Everton have been much better away from home this season. They've only won 2 home games all season so far in the Premier League. What could possibly go wrong?
I was going to
that was the most Everton statement a person could make.
I was going to bring a Devon Lock analogy in there, I think, to be fair, to carry on. I'm Connor on this, by the way. Every time I watch Brighton, I'm always really impressed with them. I know they've spent a few bob, but you know, when you talk about clubs having an identity and a manager shaping the way the team is playing and coaching them, you know, you really see that with Brighton. And I know it's sort of widely held view that they've, what they've lacked is a striker to convert their territorial advantage in possession stats into more goals. So they have got weaknesses. It's a Monday night, isn't it? For the start, repeat of last week. I think a lot could go wrong, really. I think Brighton's poor form at home sort of goes against them. And I think it was poor last year as well, wasn't it, after Christmas? So it's a long-standing thing. But that's what you said, they were away. I think there's a lot could go wrong, to be honest with you. It's not a given. It's not an easy fixture. And we're going to have to be on our mettle and convert our chance a lot more than, you know, a lot more ruthlessly than what we did on Monday, to be honest with you. So it's a hackneyed phrase, but it's a tough game, isn't it? I think, in that context.
Yeah. I think Preno looks at both things over the last few weeks when I've watched Brighton. They control the ball really well, but I think they're really good at, you know, breaking teams down, playing through the lines, creating chances in that sort of way. But, you know, especially against Manchester United, both in the first half last week, I thought they should have killed that game in those first 45 minutes, and it has been finishing those chances that's let them down. So, as Connor says, it's vital that Everton are clinical at the other end of the pitch, isn't it, to make sure that they can punish Brighton.
Yeah, it's like a carbon copy of our last couple of performances, isn't it? Except, like everybody, I'm always impressed when I watch Brighton play, you know, the potter ball, do they call it? It's, you know, really good, attractive, easy on the edge stuff. Amazes me when I look at the league table and I see them where they are, and I'm thinking, how can a team capable of playing such good quality football be in a position like that? And it is, as you say, because of poor finishing. Was it the game I saw against West Brom, was it, where absolute took them to the cleaners and, you know, just missed chances galore. Very, very similar to our game on Monday night, actually. And, you know, so, you know, paid the penalty for it. So, yeah, we've got to be more clinical and more ruthless. And strangely, that has been one of our, you know, positives this season. Up until recent games, you know, we had this really good ratio of goals to chances created. It just seems to have fallen apart quite spectacularly in the last game or two. You know, you can't really just turn on and off like a switch. Strikers do strong confidence, which is why strikers do have little gluts of goal-scoring spells. You know, you see a striker in form like Richarlison earlier in the last month, you know, he gets like suddenly 4 or 5 games in a row where he scores goals because his confidence is absolutely flying and he's buzzing. And then equally, you get little, you know, sort of droughts where maybe, you know, strikers are snatching at opportunities and they're overthinking it. And it worries me a little bit. You know, obviously, Carlo was asked at the press conference today about Richarlison and Dominic Calvert-Lewin. And he was very bullish. He said, look, if we create chances, they will score against Brighton. You know, he was absolutely unequivocal. But the fact that he's talking about it, you know, means that, you know, it's obviously been spoken about on the training ground as well. Does that put seeds of doubt in the other players' minds? You've got to be psychologically strong. You've got to just, like, you know, have the strength of character to overcome that. The greatest strikers in the world, you know, I'm thinking of your Gary Linekers and your, you know, so, you know, your Bob Latchfords, your Ian Rushes, they miss chances, that they miss howlers, but they put themselves in the same position time and time again, and more often than not, you know, converted the next one. So likewise, you know, Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison have to keep doing that on Monday night. Richarlison, you get the impression he will do. You know, I like what I see him all the time. You know, he's got, you know, a real edge to him, you know, so a real, you know, bit of character. And you get the impression that, you know, his confidence won't have taken a knock despite the misses, you know, that he enjoyed on Monday night. Calvert-Lewin, don't know, you know, so he went on social media, didn't he? And he actually, you know, apologised publicly and said that, you know, he's going to work hard to put it right. But we've seen less evidence, you know, of him, you know, being as resolutely confident as maybe Richarlison is. But, you know, it's up to them on the night. Only they can put it right. You know, we absolutely need to take chances when we create them this time, because it's a game that we need. How often do we say this? It's a game that we need to win. We needed to win Monday, for God's sake, and we didn't. But, you know, we need to win now. It's as simple as that. Otherwise, you know, we are fading down into the realms of mid-table mediocrity, which nobody thought we'd be saying like a month ago.
Yet another must-win game on the horizon. So let's see if our panel think Everton are going to win. Predictions time. Conor O'Neill, are Everton going to win with Brighton on Monday night?
Yes, 2-1.
I absolutely love the confidence there.
If you can't get confidence, what's the point?
Well, exactly. Gav, do you share
I don't actually. You know what? And I think Conor's put. I would love. That's probably the quickest reaction to a prediction we've had all season, that, by the way. I normally sort of talk round in circles for half an hour and then say 1-1. So I'm going to talk round in circles for 5 seconds and say 1-1. I just fancy us winning Monday, you know. I just really aren't. I think it'll be tough, especially if we're carrying a few injuries. I think Brighton are decent, and I think we may struggle with their movements and style, and I think it's going to be a big ask. So I'm going to say a pessimistic 1-1, purely because if we win, I will be so much happier.
Ooh, right. One win, one preno.
Wow. I was going to follow on, to be honest. I was going to go for a 2-1 away win again, just purely based on how contrary Everton Football Club can be. Just when you think that, you know, so we're heading in the wrong direction, we suddenly revive and, you know, so put together a really good performance. I know that's not a particularly scientific approach to predictions. And then I thought, well, you know, maybe a draw as well. I thought, can I break a trend and actually predict a defeat this season? I'm not going to, because, you know, I went into the Anfield derby feeling resolutely negative. And what happened that? So, yeah, I'm going to go for a 2-1 with Connor. So two 2-1s. So it's up to you to go for the defeat now, Adam.
I'm going to go for a defeat. I don't think any of us are necessarily scientific, by the way, with these predictions. That's not
it. Yeah,
it's not a way I would use to describe this panel, to be honest. But
I think if we were scientific, we'd be rich and we wouldn't.
Well, yeah, I would definitely monetize my predictions at this point. But I'm going to go even more positive, to be honest, and I'm going to go for a 2-0 win. So Everton are going to keep a clean sheet. Things that have struggled to score throughout this season, because if Everton don't win this game, and I've travelled all the way to Brighton, I'll be fuming. So I'm going with my heart more than my head on this one. I'm not going to lie to you. But anyway,
Brighton's a lovely place. You'll have a nice time anyway, regardless of the football.
Well, it's my first time there, so, and it's just the day that the pubs are opening up again, isn't it? So I'm hoping that at some point there'll be some sort of late night pub that's still open, and me and Sam can both head down there and have a nice little celebratory pint.
That's absolutely but you can.
Oh yeah, of course. that won't stop us after a 2-0 win.
Right.
Thank you very much for joining me, lads, and thank you very much for listening. As I said, I'm Carol. We'll both be heading down to Brighton on Monday evening to see if Everton can get their first win in 3 matches, I think it is, 3 or 4 matches in the Premier League. So fingers crossed that Everton will be able to secure that. You'll be able to follow all of the live update with us on the Liverpool Echo. But you have been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.